You're with us for a caller-only hour here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We are recalling some of the recent animal-themed conversations and gathering your ideas for future programs. We want to hear about what shows you want us to put together in the coming weeks, in the coming months. Here are some questions to get things flowing. What's on your mind about pets, about livestock or wildlife? What animals do you want to learn more about? What do you wonder about the endangered species list? Which invasive species do you think should be getting more attention here in Wisconsin? Join in now on this caller-only hour, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can get in touch with us by email. Email your show ideas to ideas@wpr.org. Now, we're going to rewind to August when we checked in on the state of Wisconsin's mink pelt industry. After we saw declining production, we saw pandemic pressures really setting in, and we spoke with Dr. John Easley, director of a nonprofit trade organization representing American mink farmers.
It's been very challenging the last 3 years. Due to the change in the amount of production worldwide over the last year, prices are starting to rebound and come up to make it profitable again for the producers to continue to produce pelts. And so they are looking forward to being able to work with their livestock and continue family traditions.
To continue family traditions there in the mink pelt industry, a big export market there. Then from mink, we went to fatal bird illnesses. Dr. Lindsay Long from the State Department of Natural Resources came on the morning show, talked about a mysterious fatal bird illness. And Dr. Long is a wildlife veterinarian. Here's part of our conversation on what scientists had eliminated as causes.
Well, they've rolled out a long list of disease-causing agents that we know of, and including like salmonella that was just recently mentioned, and some other bacteria. They've rolled out some viruses, some parasites. They're still investigating some more of those, as well as some additional toxins, or even possibly some mycotoxins like funguses and things like that. So they are working diligently to investigate this to the point that hopefully we can determine a cause.
That was that mysterious fatal bird illness. Let's bring on Chris now in Port Wing with a suggestion. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Good morning, and thanks for the opportunity to suggest. I want to suggest that we really should have the WPR put forward a series on ways to reduce and reverse climate change, as we're seeing more and more of the effects of it locally and regionally and in the nation. And, you know, we could have a series where we approach several of the different major factors, like large animal feeding operations causing a lot of methane, like fossil fuels causing a lot of carbon dioxide. We could start by looking at the drawdown project's 100 most effective ways to draw down the atmospheric greenhouse gases and really get a handle on turning this around at the source, so that we don't just have to constantly deal with symptoms like huge hurricanes in Kentucky and straight line winds in Wisconsin yesterday.
Chris, thank you for that, really tying climate change into areas that animals may be affected, CAFOs being one of them, livestock. A project drawdown is certainly a conversation we've had here on The Morning Show in recent months. Chris, thank you so much for that suggestion and really looking at climate change as a series and the impact on animals and animals on us. Now, we're going to turn to two Wisconsin dog owners who competed at the Westminster Dog Show in New York this summer. Oh, my goodness. We talked about their experiences. Here is Otto Sturm from Oconomowoc on how the competition scoring system works.
The judges in the ring judging these dogs, they're not looking at, oh, is the Pekingese better than the wire hair fox terrier or the hound dog? What they're looking at is the Pekingese closer to its own idea of perfection than the wire hair fox terrier is closer to its own idea of perfection, or than the hound dog is closer to its own idea of perfection. So the dogs are really supposed to be competing against themselves, not so much the other dogs in the ring.
Hmm. Did you get all that? Wasn't that? I love that conversation. If you're just joining us, this hour is dedicated to you, to what you want to bring to the morning show. It's caller only, and maybe you have questions you want to explore, stories or experiences you wish to share with fellow Wisconsinites. Our focus this hour is on animals, wildlife, pets, livestock, other creatures. What should the morning show talk about next? What animal programs matter the most to you? Do you appreciate more advice type segments with researchers or experts? What information is most useful to your life? Join in, share your show ideas, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. We traveled to Malone, Wisconsin, and heard from Clara Hedrick, who is founder of LeClaire Family Creamery in Malone. And in September, we talked about the farm's goat yoga classes.
The goat is just, I always say kids and kids, and that's what a baby goat is known as, are just perfect together. They are a very loving, inquisitive animal. So it's not like you have to, train this goat to like to be by people. They just naturally want to do that. They love to play with people. So there's not, we didn't have to do anything in particular, to get that goat to interact with the people.
You know, I haven't tried goat yoga yet, but it really sounded enticing. I do like yoga, just I've never done it around goats. We're going to travel now to Lyric Bartholomew, who is a UW-Madison professor, studies infectious disease agents and parasites. And over the summer, we talked about takeaways from research and this app tracking tick bites.
The black-legged ticks tend to like sort of scrubby, brushy areas around and in forests. And some of our team members, both through the tick app and through surveillance that we've been doing, have started to see ticks more in people's backyards. The other thing that we're really interested in and is what have the impacts of the pandemic been on people's exposure to ticks? And you know, people were actually trying to stay socially distant from other people, but sometimes really we're getting outdoors more. And so the paradox perhaps is that in order to avoid the virus, people may have been encountering more ticks just because they were outdoors more.
I wonder, did you download the tracking tick bite app and whether it worked or not? You know, speaking with Lyric Bartholomew last summer, we also talked about two mosquito species possibly expanding into Wisconsin.
The rock pool mosquito has done an extraordinary job of establishing all over the state now. We can even find it up in northern Wisconsin. So that one's done a very successful job of invading. The tiger mosquito seems to have some limits. So we're on the lookout for it. We found it in just a couple of places in Wisconsin, and we're not entirely convinced that it survives our Wisconsin winter, so might be less of a threat.
We are revisiting bits and pieces of conversations this hour with you. We opened up the lines to find out where you want to take the programming on the morning show next, along the lines of animals, if you will. Let's talk about the programming you want to hear in 2022 and beyond at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite animal? Do you have a favorite zoo in the state or in the country? Henry Vilas, Milwaukee Zoo, St. Louis Zoo, perhaps. Is there a conversation about ethical conservation that you've been thinking about? Did you come across an article or some research that deserves more fleshing out, that deserves a talk conversation across Wisconsin? Join in, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute on this caller-only hour here on the Ideas Network. We're listening to Highlights from the Morning Show, inviting your ideas for future conversations about animals. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss all sorts of creatures here: bears, fish, deer, sandhill cranes, worms, mosquitoes, just to name a few. Which animals are creating problems in your life, or which animals are brightening your days? What should we be talking about during our mornings together? What is important to you? Join in on this caller-only hour at 800-642-1234. Email your show ideas and topics you want to know more about to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Sonit now in Lake Geneva. Hi, Sonit.
Hi. I am a member of the Geneva Lake Conservancy. I live at Lake Geneva. And I'm a helper with a group of us who are called Conservation at Home. It's just us, conservation and then the at sign and then home.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is people tell us that they would like us to come to their property, their homes or their land, and we can help you to know what are invasives that should be taken out because they do damage to wildlife, to birds, to your soil, and so forth, and how to do that. And we can recommend and give you printouts for native plants that you could put in that you would like better. We can make it so you can have color all year long, or, well, not in snow time, but mm-hmm. three seasons. And high, low, different areas of your property, how we can enhance it. And we can give you every material that you need. Then we talk with the people we're visiting and try to be very specific in meeting their needs. And sometimes they already have a lot of natives, and so they just need a little bit more. And then they can qualify for a very pretty sign you can put on your property that says,
wow,
conservation at home, and it'll benefit the birds, the butterflies, the small animals, and
the entire ecosystem. Really, and so you actually survey the property. You walk around, yeah. And oh wow, this,
yes,
is amazing.
Go there with the owner,
uh-huh.
And then we follow it through with a letter detailing everything we talked about, because, you know, it's easy to forget that stuff. And then we leave a package of resources that tell exactly where you can purchase whatever it is you need and when to plant and everything. And then we'll come back again whenever you want and say, okay, let's see what you've got. Do you have some questions?
Wow.
People love it, and then they recommend it to their friends. And it's especially good for people who live along a waterfront, like a lake or a stream.
Thank you for bringing this to our attention. And this is the Geneva Lake Conservancy, and called Conservation at Home. That's correct, right?
That's,
okay.
That's right. And if you don't live near Lake Geneva, just try whatever conservation group is in your town or your county. And I'm sure they'll help you in some way, even if they don't have this program.
Oh, thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate it. Let's go to Gary now in Boscobel. Gary, hi.
How are you this morning?
Doing well. What's on your mind about animals?
Well, I've been doing prairie restoration work through the Prairie Enthusiast for about 50 years. So I've seen changes in plant communities, native insect populations, but especially in bird populations. And I have talked with bird lovers from Alaska to North Dakota to Nebraska and here in Wisconsin, and bird numbers are plummeting. Last spring, bird photography, the bottom fell out of that. A migration on the Mississippi River is almost non-existent last spring anyway, with a lot of shorebirds and ducks.
What do you think is going on?
Well, I don't know for sure. It could be that with falling native insect populations, that there is a shortage of food for young birds. It could be that seasonal weather patterns are out of sync with the nesting and raising youngsters. From what I understand, about 80% of our bluebird population was lost last year when they had the ice storms in Texas. and I saw one pair of bluebirds nesting in my bluebird trails this spring. So
you keep a close watch on it. Are there any specific experts or specific resources that you would like us to seek out and search for?
You know, that's a good question, and I don't know myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's such there's no clear cut answers.
Sure.
In any species that's in trouble, whether it's plants or insects or animals or birds, usually it's not from any one single cause.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in some of my observations, in years when we have a lot of rain and we have really heavy black fly infestations, those black flies are blood suckers, and they oftentimes will kill all the birds in a nest because they get in there and then they drain the blood out of these young birds before they ever fledge.
Well, let me ask you this. The prairie enthusiasts that you've been a part of for a half century, how active is the organization, and what are the types of projects you work on?
Well, we have 11 chapters in three states. We have a total assets of about $11 million, and we own or manage almost 50 prairie remnants and oak savanna remnants in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and part of Illinois. And it's all done by volunteers, and we try to save the plant community there, because the plant community is the foundation for the insect populations and then the bird populations. Everything is built on the foundation of the insect populations there. And when you start losing insects, you start losing pollinators, and you start losing plant species because there's no reproduction. So
all
this stuff is so intricately tied together.
It sure is.
You pull on one string and another string comes loose, you know?
Well, Gary, it's good to talk with you. We will take a look at this, and thank you for bringing the prairie enthusiast to our attention as well, and this organization and the work it's doing. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Now we're going to rewind to a conversation we had with James Perouk, who has been studying loons for about three decades, author of Loon Lessons, Uncommon Encounters with the Great Northern Diver. And we talked about his book, learned how loons evolved differently than their closest living relatives, which are penguins.
They are piscivorous or fish-eating birds. They're master divers, highly efficient at catching fish. And so eventually you took a bird that was terrestrial to move into this new niche, this underwater niche, both freshwater and marine environments, and had to be better at catching a fish, for example, if it was going to be successful. So we see modification of the skeletal system. We see the feet are positioned far posteriorly or towards the back, enlarged feet, added rotation in terms of the joint, enlarged webs, all to help propel the loon, to make it streamlined through the water for the ability to kind of, chase down and catch fish.
Wow. James Perouk there, loon expert we had on earlier this year. Susie in Pewaukee has something for us. Hi, Susie. Go ahead.
Hi. I would like to hear a program on regarding lawn pesticides and fertilizers and things. I think we all know that it gets rid of dandelions and weeds, but I'd like to have a program that lists all the benefits of not using that stuff.
Not having that monoculture lawn. Mm-hmm.
Well, and including protecting the water.
So, and certainly wanting to look more closely at what these chemicals do, what the applications are that people are putting on their lawns. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. And by not doing them, what benefits are accrued? Because for the insects, the birds, the water, purity and all those things.
Susie, what is your lawn like?
It's pretty natural. I've had it natural like this for a number of years, and it actually gets better every year.
Hmm.
And I think it has to do with even with leaving a certain amount of leaf litter in the lawn every year. I've heard on Larry Mueller's program that that's equivalent to one fertilizing practice, but it just seems like without me doing anything, it's actually getting better.
I bet that it's such a great habitat, or it's turned to such a great habitat over the years for so many creatures and critters.
Including all the little bees, the mason bees, and so many different things, butterflies. And it's, you know, these insects are all under stress. And it just seems like just to save one, I mean, to keep one dandelion out of your yard, it's just like an overkill thing. And those dandelions are useful to the early pollinators that come in the early part of the year. So,
we will look at the effects of lawn chemicals. Thank you so much for that suggestion on this caller-only hour. We're spending the hour listening back to some of this year's animal conversations, but most importantly, gathering your ideas for future segments in 2022. 800-642-1234. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. Now we are exploring wherever the conversation takes us. This hour is dedicated to you and what you want to bring to the morning show along the lines of animals. That's where we are at. What are your ideas for future programs and segments? What is on your mind? Which shows about animals have you enjoyed most? And which guests should we definitely have back and why? Join in, show ideas. Welcome, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring on Chris now in Adams. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. Jane Goodall, you're looking for experts. Jane Goodall has formed organizations that are dealing with climate change issues, and she's not only an expert in this field, she's also a stunning example of what one person who's mobilized herself can get done on a planetary level. So I think she would be an excellent guest, and she's giving interviews, so maybe you guys can contact
her. I've noticed that. I mean, she said recently that it is our humanity's disrespect of the natural world that brought on the pandemic, and that we need a more sustainable relationship with the natural world. So, Chris, thank you so much for the suggestion of seeking out that legendary primatologist, Jane Goodall. Appreciate it, and appreciate you listening in. Let's go to Lynn now in La Crosse. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I'd like to hear a show about the indigenous people and their respect for animals and how they honor animals, and that would be in direct opposition with our CAFOs.
Thank you so much for that suggestion. Appreciate it. How indigenous communities honor animals and how it contrasts to others in the world. So we really appreciate that, Lynn. Thank you for that suggestion. Now looking to email, one of our listeners shared a program suggestion over email, and they want to learn more about Great Lakes flora and fauna, and specifically foxes. And by the way, foxes, I see those on my bike ride in most mornings, so which is really fun. So join in if you have show ideas for us, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Tommy now in southeastern Minnesota. Hi, Tommy.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. How's it going in Minnesota?
Real good. I like your show, and I was just suggesting that more restaurants and bars should be dog friendly. It seems like Home Depot and them that are have good luck with them. I think dog owners are better tippers. So
you're watching which types of establishments are letting dogs in, which aren't. Have you seen changes in recent years?
Well, I mean, like the Fireman Fleets and Home Depot are the ones I know of, and there's some local restaurants that do, but I think that there's so many pet lovers, I think there'd be more interest in it, you know. They seem to do really good at Home Depot and Fireman Fleet and stuff.
I would imagine you have a dog?
Yeah, yep. And we do mostly home because I don't like leaving her at home.
What kind of dog is she?
She's a teddy bear. One of them crosses. She thinks she's a honey badger sled dog crossbow, but she only weighs 11 pounds.
sounds pretty adorable, pretty irresistible. Someone you'd a dog you'd really want to be out in public for sure.
Yeah, she's good. part of the addition here for sure.
Well, Tomi, thank you for that suggestion into looking how establishments, how retail locations are handling animals and whether it's more, they've moved beyond just having dogs that are there for a specific purpose, whether, you know, dogs of all kinds can come into different establishments. So now let's rewind to a conversation we had in August when we talked about a new study on COVID antibodies found in white-tailed deer. We discussed the study with Kristen Bernard, who's a professor of veterinary virology in the Department of Pathobiological Sciences at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine.
So it's almost like a footprint in your immune system, if you want to think about it that way, where when we're exposed to any kind of a pathogen or even allergies, foreign proteins of any kind, viruses, bacteria, et cetera, our immune system develops antibodies to it as well as other molecules. But in particular, it's those antibodies. And they can last for a very, very long time. And that's one of the things we're looking at with the vaccines currently is how long do the antibodies last in people that get the vaccines? So those antibodies are often protective against the pathogen, and so that when you're exposed again, the antibodies are right there in your blood ready to attack the pathogen.
That is Kristen Bernard. And we heard earlier this week, too, about virologists like Kristen Bernard, who are very much in demand in these times in the pandemic, as we discussed earlier this week about the development of a universal vaccine, a super vaccine, virologist really much a part of that type of research. You can join in as we discuss this caller-only hour about animals, different segments you'd like us to explore that talk about animals. Join in, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org as we revisit bits and pieces of conversation aired on the morning show. We also want to hear about where you want to take the show next. Join in at 800-642-1234. Now, in June, we spoke with Tori Willardson, who trains dogs in Sheboygan Falls, and he matches veterans with rescue and humane society dogs. And here's part of our conversation about starting after working as a civilian contractor for the military.
We had some casualties in Afghanistan while I was there. One of my dog handlers was on a mission at night without his dog. And he was a double amputee, and within 10 days of him waking up from the IED explosion, he asked for his dog. And that kind of started it all in motion. I saw what the dogs did. I saw the bond it was creating with their handlers in Afghanistan, and the morale that it created with just having the dogs on the bases was outstanding. So my fight to get him his dog that he deployed with then turned into I wanted to try to get the dogs to the rest of the guys.
And that was Tori Willardson, who trains dogs in Sheboygan Falls. Let's bring on Nina now in Gurnee, Illinois. Hi, Nina.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind? Sure.
I would love to have Dr. Karen Shaw Becker and Rodney Habib interviewed on their new bestseller book, The Forever Dog. It's a book about promoting longevity in your dog. And they've traveled the world actually interviewing people who have had the longest lived dogs, like 27 years old, 30 years old, you know, interviewed them on what they did. And
what did you learn from the book? Have you read the book?
I'm reading it. Mm-hmm. I'm just learning little things you can do to add to the longevity of your dog's life. Like if you feed kibble, you can add a little bit of fresh foods in there, and adding teas to your food, and just it's just full of information.
It's full of ideas and suggestions. Yes. And the book is called The Forever Dog, is that right?
Yes. Yeah, and it's a bestseller. It was the bestseller within, I think, 90 minutes of being released, and it's being translated in many countries.
Well, Nina, thank you. We will look into it. And what kind of dog do you have, by the way?
I have two dogs. I have a 14-and-a-half-year-old Doberman Boxer mix, and then I have a little Terrier mix, a 5-year-old.
Well, 14-and-a-half, I can kind of see why you would want to be reading that forever dog. It sounds like you have dogs who are in really good health.
I do. Yes, she is in great health. And I've been following Dr. Becker and Rodney for years and just, doing little things. And people think she's 2 years old when they see her.
Wow. Nina, thank you so much. Let's go to Danielle in Janesville, who is a veterinarian. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going well. What tips or advice do you have for us?
Yeah, so I just thought I would call in just to give a different perspective. Obviously, animals are my passion and my livelihood. And one of the things that I think would be a really good topic for people to come in and discuss is to actually hear from a veterinarian who not only works on the front lines in the small animal clinic, but why is it hard to get into vet clinics? All of these things that are going on with the new pandemic and getting new dogs, and why, you can't get into your vet clinic for 3 weeks, and just the emergency clinic waits, and just how this pandemic has really turned the veterinary world upside down, and what you can do to get on good terms with your vet to try and help keep everybody healthy and safe.
How has it changed for you? How has it affected your clinic?
Yeah, so we're a mixed animal practice, so we see all types of animals. And so when the start of the pandemic happened, we did initially kind of go curbside and shut down. So getting into the vet clinic was actually quite difficult because we weren't allowing people in. And now that we do allow people in with masks and coverings, we have seen an explosion of what we call them pandemic puppies. Where a lot of people, kind of went out and got dogs because they were at home. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing, those dogs are now a year or two of age, and some of them haven't been socialized. And a lot of these people are trying to get in for vaccines and surgeries. And we're booking, at least at our small animal clinic, we're booking 1 to 2 months out. And that was not the case 2 or 3 years ago, where you could get seen, same day or same week. And so planning ahead for emergencies and vaccines are really important right now.
I wonder if you've seen routine care get backlogged, because we saw that in the human world where people were putting off all of these routine type appointments.
Yep, that is 100% what happened in the small animal world too. Yeah, we ended up, a lot of people put off their spays, their neuters. We didn't have a lot of vaccines. We've even seen a rise in dogs that have bitten humans that were, overdue on their rabies because they said we just didn't fit in and because we didn't want to come into the vet clinic, which is 100% understandable. It's been crazy for sure.
Wow. Well, it's good to talk with you. We will take the suggestion to heart, and thank you for your work. Thank you for calling in.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
We are collecting future show ideas from you this hour, rewinding on some of this year's memorable conversations about animals. And you can join in with your show ideas on animals, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute, maybe hear from you here on the Ideas Network. We're back with more conversation about the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're hearing from you about your animal-themed conversation ideas that we should pursue in this caller-only hour. Let's go to Steve now in Lake Geneva. Hi, Steve. What is on your mind?
Yes, hi there. So I'm kind of responding to the woman who called in earlier and works with the Geneva Lakes Conservancy. And this can be brought into conservation efforts in general, my comments, and that is, one, removing invasive species is absolutely critical, and we have huge numbers in southeast Wisconsin, buckthorn, honeysuckle, garlic mustard, et cetera. But so is reducing light pollution, which is estimated to be growing at roughly 2% on an annual basis, and creating huge challenges for our native insects and wildlife in general. And then there's the issue or matter of deer browse, which is huge, and it's really damaging and destructive to our native plants, or many woody species, which can't regenerate because of the heavy deer browse pressure. I personally have firsthand experience with this, both on our residential property and roughly 17 acres that I'm in the process of helping, quote, restore on the east side of Lake Como, just northwest of Lake Geneva. And this is nicely summarized in an article published in the autumn 2020 issue of a publication called Living Bird by Cornell Lab of Ornithology. And I'd highly recommend inviting a professor, Bernd, B-E-R-N-D, Blossey, B-L-O-S-S-E-Y, who's cited in the article.
Mm-hmm.
He's a professor with the Cornell University Department of Natural Resources, and he studied deer management and published a report earlier, they believe that hunting is like the best way to control these populations. So I say bring in the sharpshooters.
All right, Steve, thank you so much. I took it down. Invasives, the reducing the light pollution, the habitat challenges with deer browse, and this Cornell lab piece called Living Bird. And we'll look into that. Thank you for that. Shirley now in Spooner on rabbits. Shirley, hi.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to add?
Well, I really don't know exactly what to add, but I was just wondering how I could feed the wild rabbits. I'll put out rabbit pellets and things for it, but I'm so afraid of inviting things like raccoons and skunks, which I don't want. I just want to feed the rabbits. Is there any way I can put out pellets for the rabbits, but yet I'll put out something that might deter the other critters from eating the rabbit pellets?
All right. We will certainly explore that question, Shirley. Thank you so much on the issue of rabbits and Shirley wanting to know how to feed them, how to have them around. Shirley, thank you. Linda now in Milwaukee. Linda, hi. You want to talk about CWD?
Yes, hi. I'd like to talk about CWD, chronic wasting disease, and the role that deer farms might or might not play in the spread of CWD in Wisconsin, as well as the lack of action by the legislature in the last couple years on this issue, this problem that was discovered in 2002 and has only gotten increasingly worse over those last years. CWD has been found in 58 counties in Wisconsin out of the 72 counties, including Milwaukee County. And so that's a program I would like to see on those issues.
Sure. Continued close attention to the spread of chronic wasting disease and what the state is doing about it. Linda, thank you so much for calling in with that suggestion. Appreciate it. We also heard from Peg in Middleton. Peg called, couldn't stay with us, and Peg is concerned about animals in pet stores. Peg would like to know more about how they are taken care of. Are pet stores short-staffed like every other retail industry? And how have pet stores with live animals changed over the years? These are really great questions. Peg, thank you for that show idea about the pet store industry, where those animals come from, and how they're taken care of as we run in and out and get our dog food and pet food and those animals that are in there. You can join in with your show ideas, 800-642-1234. This year, we got tips on raising backyard chickens. And here's part of our conversation with Nick Lewandowski, who is the owner of Sunnyside Hatchery in Beaver Dam and president of the Wisconsin Poultry and Egg Industries Association.
Just like when people are considering getting a pet or getting some, you know, livestock into their hobby farm, they've got to definitely consider the time commitment. I mean, you might not want to admit it, you're becoming a farmer, and you're responsible for the care of these animals, from the day they arrive to the day they end up in your freezer or they go down the road. And so make sure that that you know, you're up for the process here. And for people that are buying laying chickens, I mean, it's a 5 or 6 month commitment to get those birds from being a baby chick all the time up to the point when they're ready to lay eggs.
That was Nick Lewandowski. Thank you for that. Let's go to Yordis now in Colfax. Yordis, hi.
I would like to have a show on grieving for animals, for pets. And it felt like I was hit by a train when my cat passed away from cancer last year. It was just unbelievable pain. And I got a book on a grieving from the Grief Institute for Pets. And it was an extraordinary book. It helped me so much. And I wonder if you could get someone from the Grief Institute. It is specifically for grieving for animals on your program.
This is called the Grief Institute for Pets. Is that right?
Yeah, I might have the name wonky, but that's how I remember. Uh-huh. I got the book out of the library.
How are you doing now?
It took a long time to get better. Mm-hmm. My life completely collapsed. I couldn't even drive the car. I was shaking so bad.
Oh, no.
And I've had 7 cats pass away previous over a long period of time. But this cat, when he suddenly died of cancer, I collapsed.
Oh.
And I did find a therapist, and I had to be on medication, which I've never been in my life, for a time just to stabilize. And then a year later, another cat passed away of a brain tumor. And so this has been a really intense period in my husband and my life. And I just think people should understand that grief can be overwhelmingly powerful with an animal, just like a parent or a spouse.
Oh, Yordis, thank you for calling in and talking about it and sharing it, and the Grief Institute for Pets, that you found it. We will look into it and appreciate your call. Angela now in Fort Atkinson. Angela, hi.
Hi. I would like to have a topic on wildlife rehabilitation. We don't have enough people licensed in the state, so we kind of need to talk through the process of how to get licensed, where to volunteer, what to do if you find an animal, who and who does not need to be rescued, et cetera, et cetera. But there's, when people find a wild animal, they don't know the laws regarding it. They don't know where to go.
Where to take it if it's injured.
Yeah, or if the animal even needs to be rescued. And then, you know, how to get more people helping out with the wildlife.
Angela, appreciate that topic. Thank you so much. And thank you for everyone who called in with show ideas, who emailed for the morning show all hour long. We will look into all of them, and we appreciate it. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show with you, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.